It's the next gear on podtech.net. I'm Matt Kelly. I'm joined today by Chet Huber of OnStar. It's been an incredible decade for the company that began in 1996, the in-car vehicle navigation system and emergency services system. Chet, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, glad to be here.
Let's talk about the last 10 years. What a ride. Yeah. Going from Generation 1 to Generation 7 now.
Yeah, it's been an incredible journey for us. I've been with General Motors for 34 years now and was 23 years a locomotive salesman. And so my transition into the world of anything about what OnStar is today, whether it's the technology, whether it's the fact that it's a consumer-facing business, it's almost unbelievable where it's come. And, you know, we started with a vision 10 years ago that the inherent kernels of technology that would make this work, things like GPS, things like wireless, the wireless build-out that was, you know, being done for the cellular industry.
They were just coming into the market.
Yeah, in
the
mid-90s, if you think about it, I mean, there were people with cell phones for sure, but I think at that point there might have been 20 million people that were subscribers, and obviously now, you know, there's well over 100 million people that are subscribers. The networks are much more capable than they were before. But even back in the mid-90s, vehicles were much more sophisticated from an electronic standpoint than anybody really understood. The car manufacturers did, but they were becoming platforms where you could literally aspire to say, I can take advantage of this, the robustness of these electrical architectures and interact with them organically and create some services. So that was the vision, kind of take those pieces, try to determine as best we could from research 10 years ago, what would customers want out of that. What we determined was safety, security, and peace of mind would be at the core of the largest value that you could create with those technologies. So we kind of locked in on that as an objective. We knew we didn't fit well in the auto business.
A lot of the other automakers were saying you can't do this.
Well, a lot of them said you couldn't do it. Frankly, GM didn't know that you could do it either. I'm just very proud of the company for stepping up and trying to do this in the first place.
Well, your passion comes through.
Well, you can't help, honestly, at the end of the day, I mean, to fast forward through seven generations of hardware, a lot of new services, growing from no subscribers to 5 million. I actually had a bullseye on the wall of my office when we first started and had a 50 in the middle. And I thought, if we ever get 50 new customers in one day, it would be crazy. And we were kind of a dealer installed option at that point. And I have these little marks on this 50 that like 39, 18, and it was like the day, every day I'd mark it differently. We had a day a year ago at the end of one of GM's most successful kind of promotion programs on the vehicle side where we provisioned 70,000 customers for OnStar in one day.
Wow.
And it was like, it's almost like I needed a split screen for myself to see, you know, when I was back with the 50 on the wall and thinking 70,000 a day, it was unbelievable. But we had 70 million interactions with these customers. We responded to 50,000 crashes, literally hundreds of thousands of emergency requests. We put, more or less, we're somewhat known today that we're easy to use, that we're reliable, we can be trusted.
But I think, you know, we've been talking here a little while ago that maybe some people actually don't really know all that OnStar does. So just kind of nutshell it for us and let's go through it here. Safety,
yep.
Okay? First thing is if you're in a vehicle crash, you can push that button and immediately be connected with an OnStar representative who can perhaps get you in touch with an EMS person. But then there's also diagnostics within the car that actually tell what type of crash it was, so it sends the right emergency personnel there.
Yeah, that part's been amazing. Actually, at the very start of it, we said, we're not going to do it unless we can do some things that are just inherently valuable to people and aren't going to require them to become technologists. So if your car's in a crash and the airbags deploy, you don't do anything. I mean, literally, the car's smart enough to know it's been in a crash. It sends us the information on where you are. It opens a voice channel into the car. The advisor on our side knows where you are, knows the vehicle that's been involved in the crash, knows there's been a crash. We open up a line to the appropriate 911 response jurisdiction, and then we decide what kind of help you're going to need, and when we interact that way.
And particularly if you're unable to respond.
Exactly, and that happens a lot of times. And then the next version of that technology, which is what we were taught to take seriously by the 911 folks, was, all right, tell us how bad the crash was. I mean, okay, you guys have a lot of technology in these vehicles. It's one thing to know there's a crash. There's another thing to know that it was a side crash or a front crash or the vehicle rolled over or how many, what was the force in this crash? Because we had no idea. I'm a mechanical engineer by background, but I mean, I wasn't a biomedical mechanical engineer. So what we learned is if your body is exposed to a crash where the car was hit from the side, your organs do not like to move that way. They bump into things differently inside your own body than they do if you're hit from the front or from the rear. And it's those internal injuries that they can't, they, when you get to the trauma center, they can't see any indication of those on you that ultimately could be the cause of you dying. And so what these guys said is, give us something about this and we'll know to check for a lacerated kidney or a ruptured spleen, because those are tests that are, you don't want to have that test if you don't need it, but you clearly want to be in a position where you're not walking out thinking everything's fine and it's really not.
And I think that's probably one of the most important things that I've learned about OnStar just in the few past couple of days that I've spent with you, is that you actually interact with the EMS personnel on a regular basis to figure out how can we make this service better, almost as a public service to the community.
Well, we recognized very early on that if we were going to do our job well and be accepted by the community, we needed to, first of all, find a place where we could be valuable and not try to do their work for them, because they have enough challenges doing their work, and they're wonderful people. These guys are just unbelievably dedicated to what they do. But we can help a lot if we shorten the time between the time something needs response and we can get them in touch. So we learned early on that we could be very helpful there, and we've worked very hard to maintain that level of trust and respect. And then we also said, hey, look, what else do you guys want us to do? How can we take this to the next level? And there have been some just individual people. There's a fellow that was, at the time I met him, he was the president of the National Association of EMS Physicians, I think. He was the emergency medicine chair at the State University of New York at Syracuse, Dr. Rick Hunt. And Rick had dedicated his life to trauma response, particularly crash trauma response from vehicles. And he found us, knowing what we were doing, and he basically developed a relationship that I'm just proud to have with him, between he and I personally, where he, first of all, judged that we were serious and then said, all right, well, if you guys are serious, here's where we can work together. He's now at the CDC and the Injury Prevention Center at the Centers for Disease Control, and just a terrific guy. And he helped us see we had to be going the next step for these things like advanced crash notification, and we were happy to do it. I mean, at the end of the day, GM's brought tremendous ranges of leading technology and safety in particular to the market. And this was one of those things that was, hey, look, why not? You know, if we can take advantage of this, we've got brilliant people. I mean, GM and the engineering side, OnStar, let's go for it. So we did that. You mentioned that, you know, press the button if you're in a crash. We built this three-button interface in the car that we thought would make it simple for people to deal with us. And one of the buttons is a red cross. And our vision, when we did that, was just for your use case. We thought, okay, there's going to be a crash and the airbags don't deploy. Maybe it's, at that time when we launched, there were no side airbags. So it was like, okay, you know, those kind of crashes. I can tell you that's what we thought the button was for, because I was there when we invented it. And our vision wasn't that big. That button gets pressed 15,000 times a month now. Mm. And it generally has nothing to do with a crash. It has to do with people spend 500 million hours a week in their vehicles, and because they intersect with that. And so this is life happens while you're driving.
It was interesting. We met at the Detroit Auto Show, and we got a tour of the command center, the OnStar command center. And I have to say, I was just incredibly blown away seeing some of those big screens up there of real-time deployment, and that you're actually keeping track of it. Talk a little bit about the command center and that is the nerve center of this.
Yeah, well, as we've grown, the business become more complex, just keeping track of everything going on and making sure that we're preparing for any event that might be happening real-time and staying on top of it
And I'm going to then bring it to a very recent event. Yeah. And you had mentioned this about the recent avalanche in Denver, and that you guys opened your command center and were ready to respond should it be called upon.
Yeah, what we've really learned is it's important for us, particularly as the subscriber base has grown, to be there for you on your own individual emergency, which is kind of a lot of what we're there for. But we intersect, obviously, with bigger events than just somebody's crash at an intersection. We intersect with hurricanes, we've intersected with wildfires, we've intersected with earthquakes, high-profile crimes, and as you mentioned recently, and this is the time of year for these things, some pretty significant weather events like the big snowfall and the avalanches in Colorado. And what we do, what we've learned to do over time, what the command center gives us visibility on, is to say, all right, we've got customers in an area that are broadly affected. We don't want to have a good day selling services that you didn't originally sign up for because you didn't think you'd need them in the middle of one of these events. So in the case of what's going on in Colorado, we open up all of our services that we have to offer. As long as you're an active subscriber, we'll give you any service we have if you're in one of those areas while there's a crisis going on. And again, nobody told us we had to do that. Nobody ever really prompted us to do that. It was just maybe 2 or 3 years ago when we had our first real experiences with hurricanes way before Katrina and Rita. We just learned, hey, that was the right thing to do. And
well, let's talk about that. I mean, what do you think you came away from those hurricanes with?
We always learn what you learn very quickly in this business, and it gets reinforced every day, is there is no such thing as a national 911 network. There is no such thing as a broadly managed response to all these crises. And, you know, that probably came out most obviously to the public during the hurricanes, and particularly Katrina, where, you know, the federal agencies were criticized for maybe not doing everything. But frankly, it's not honestly set up for that to be the way it works. It really works at a city level, where the local jurisdictional boundaries are supposed to take charge at the first level of a crisis. It works at a county level, works at a state level. The federal government certainly has responsibilities, and they have a wave as well. And so what we've learned through these things is how to stay in touch with the various local authorities that are going to have the best information about what's going on. So to us, those are like, okay, what's the evacuation routes that you want somebody to take if they're in an area and they're trying to leave? If there's a shelter that somebody needs to go to, where are those shelters? And in fact, what's the status of the shelters? Are they full? Aren't they full? If there are gas stations around that aren't running out of fuel, how do we get localized information around those kinds of things? I mean, just kind of the general situational awareness. Those events have really given us an opportunity to see that clearly. And there's two elements to that. One is, again, we're trying to help our subscribers because that's our job and that's what they're counting on us for. But now we see patterns of behavior in these things because we see a big group of people reacting to the situation that now the Department of Transportation in an area in Houston, if they could see what we could see relative to how this is looking in a bigger way all at once, they can say, oh, geez, that part of the city looks like it's getting overly congested or it looks like there's a real issue there. Boy, we'd really love that. First of all, now we know that and we can respond to it, but maybe we can even give you guys better direction on how to take your customers in a different direction themselves. And so we're learning now to become partners with all of these wonderful 911 folks and literally become a societal asset because we have these kind of insights and visibility
into driver behavior.
Driver behavior patterns of things that are going on. Yeah. And that's been that's really been gratifying because, you know, at the end of the day, we've talked to Homeland Security folks, we talked to FEMA, we talked to all kinds of state level officials in police and fire and emergency response. And
I think it's rather interesting that it's had to take a private entity like General Motors and OnStar to actually develop this as opposed to, you know, the Homeland Security or FEMA or something like that to actually develop it, which our tax dollars are actually going to hopefully do. So I find the interesting conundrum that, yeah, that we find ourselves
well,
in.
Well, at least the people...
That you, in essence, are the National 911 Service.
Well,
you know?
I wouldn't position this as that because, I mean, honestly, those folks do an incredible job. And if you look at the list of things that are on their plate right now, when you think about it, and particularly the ones that have been compounded in recent years with all of the now new risk, you know, I mean, if the only risks the country faced really were big weather events, that would be something, right? And maybe years ago, that's what we would think the big events were. Now we all know better. And when you think about the kind of scenarios those people have to plan for today, honestly, I'm proud of those guys. They're working with some incredible challenges, trying to attenuate risks in categories that we all want them to as citizens, with resources that, while they're considerable, still, if you just spread them across all the things they're working on, frankly, they're not going to go very far. So I'm happy that the good news is we can make it, you know, we have been able to make a successful business out of this. There are market forces at play that I believe ultimately will lead everybody that manufactures vehicles to do something like this, just because the customers find them valuable. And ultimately, the more companies that do this, I think the 911 community broadly will get better support from all of us to be able to provide that information. And, you know, while we're as competitive as anybody within General Motors, at the end of the day, it's the right thing for these things to go forward. And we've you know, we filed, I mentioned to you, for over 350 patents so far.
Never thought you'd be a patent.
No, we never thought. I actually have my name on a few of the filings, but I've not been awarded one yet. I'm bummed. But they're in process. So, I mean, they take a while to come through, so I'm very still optimistic. That'll be a great day in my life. But the fact is, even if we had technology in here that was kind of like the, you know, patent for oxygen or something, you know, it's not been GM's history that we would hold it back and say we'll prevent people from doing this. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we would fairly license the technology we've developed because you'd like this infrastructure to just be something that the country could count on being there broadly.
Now it's 10 years later, and you do have to remain competitive in a sense in the industry, and you're actually coming out with some new products. And one of the ones that I kind of want to talk about a lot is the vehicle diagnostics, which I think actually has tremendous opportunity, and we'll kind of discuss that as we go in. But first, give our listeners a little overview of this new service that OnStar is launching.
Yeah, about 5 or 6 years ago, we developed an in-vehicle diagnostic capability where if your car's not running right and you just don't know what it is, and most normal people wouldn't know what's wrong with their car, you could press the OnStar button, you could talk to an advisor, they could download the car's diagnostic computers while you were driving, and they could basically not tell you that your oxygen sensor was bad, but they would, what we've characterized as vehicle triage. So they would say, okay, this vehicle is in an unsafe to drive condition, stop driving, we'll send help to the vehicle and we'll take care of it. That's one end of the triage. The other end of the triage is, you know what, your gas cap probably isn't on tight and your fuel system isn't pressurizing. That's why you've got the check engine light. So when it's safe, pull over, crank your gas cap until you hear it click and see what happens. And it's everything in between. So, and that's been a very successful service. I think that's 30,000 times a month we do that. But it opened the door to this vehicle telemetry capability now, right? That, you know, you think about if somebody's running in the Indy 500 or in a NASCAR race, you know, they've got guys on the in the pits that kind of wirelessly look at the performance of the vehicle as it's driving, and you go, wow, it's pretty neat. They can see what's going on. So we said, all right, we're going to translate this episodic, you know, every now and then, if you've got a problem, call us. Now your car is going to be smart enough that every month it's going to check every system that we have access to. Generally, it's about 1,600 diagnostic codes. And it's going to establish this one-to-one relationship between the car and its owner. And, you know, people like their cars. A lot of people have an emotional connection to their car. So now their car, your car is sending you an email once a month and saying, hey, I'm fine, or I need a little help here. How are you doing, kind of thing.
You know, so when I first heard about it, it's like, oh, God, I get another email, you know, another piece of spam. And I'm looking at the printout here, and then I'm like, no, this actually is incredible. Tire pressure monitoring, just as one example. And, you know, that on our channel, we're pretty concerned about fuel conservation, alternative fuels and whatnot. We know that if you have a, if your tires are running at a lower pressure, it's going to affect your mileage.
Yep.
And so that right there, to be able to tell you you're running on a low tire pressure and it's affecting your miles per gallon.
Yeah, we've had sensors built in vehicles, GM has for years, that say instead of kind of the change your oil every 3 months, 3,000 miles, you really need to change your oil based upon how you're driving. And you know, generally speaking, 3,000 miles in 3 months is the minimum threshold that you'd need an oil change. But what we're now bringing to life on this vehicle diagnostic email is we read those sensors and we tell you, here's, you know, you need an oil change at this time. And generally speaking, that's more like 7,500 miles.
And see, and I think that's incredible because I think the American public has been sold a bill of goods for the longest time. Oh, change your mileage every 3,000 miles, 3 months, blah, blah, blah. When in actuality, it's almost double that, dependent on your driving and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So now OnStar and General Motors are saving me money and giving me the real deal, the right information. I'm like, finally.
Well, and you know, honestly, the vehicles have improved over the years, and so part of the reason that, that you can extend it is that. So, I mean, what we're really doing today is saying this is the state of the art possibilities with your vehicle. We're going to try to make whatever it is that's been developed, you know, come to life in the way that's most useful to you. You're right, 7,500 miles will save you money. It saves the use of oil. So, I mean, there's an environmental element to it at the same time, and you know, honestly, it brings to some people that don't think about their vehicle, or if they think about it, they get nervous because it's a complicated machine. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I'm old enough to remember times when, you know, I could literally get under the hood with an engine of a car I owned back in the 60s. You know, I mean, there was that much space under the hood, and everybody worked on their own cars. And now you can't get your hand in some vehicles under the hood because there's so much technology built there. This is meant to demystify what's going on, and that's what we're aiming for.
One of the things that I see as a tremendous opportunity with this is that I could potentially take this readout over a 6 month period of time and hand it to my insurance company, and hopefully that they would give me, oh, a $100-$200 reduction in my insurance premium, because it's all right here for them to say, he's a pretty safe driver, he's keeping his tire pressures well, he's doing regular oil changes and whatnot, so they're looking at how I drive.
There's a fine line, because we're not monitoring your driving behavior, because that would be an issue from our standpoint that would take us into a privacy area we don't want to go. But the fact that you take care of your car, honestly, we've got an opportunity today. We've got an insurance company, GMACI, that's offering people that drive fewer miles because they're exposed to less risk, mm-hmm. lower miles, significant discounts on their insurance.
Exactly.
So if you drive less than 5,000 miles a year, and many people do, in my personal fleet, I've got a couple children that have cars that don't drive them that much, you can save up to 50% on your premium. And it's an opt-in service, again, based upon this email having the ability to read the odometer, where this validates or verifies that you are, in fact, a low-mileage driver. And there are a lot more insurance companies interested now that they've kind of got an understanding that this is possible and credible. And you made the statement at the beginning, you know, kind of what this can turn into. Mm-hmm. That's been the fun of everything we've done at OnStar so far. Mm-hmm. You kind of get generation one, feels like Fred Flintstone version out, and you kind of learn from it. And you see,
right.
God, you know, you could extend this way here. You can see when we launched, it didn't have safety recalls on, but honestly, it's in everybody's interest. If there's a safety campaign on an individual vehicle, everybody needs to have it closed. But the clutter of how you get communicated with normally just says, generally speaking, nobody's happy that of the response rates and timeframes. So we said, hey, look, if there's an open campaign on that vehicle and we know it by the individual vehicle identification number, then we can, in this email, highlight for you, hey, you got a campaign. You should have gotten a postcard. I mean, there's a mm-hmm. whole federally kind of overseen system for that. But this, take a look at it. And we've already seen people respond now quicker. We're seeing campaigns close quicker. Mm. People get their vehicles in the condition we want them to, because we can bring it to life in a way that highlights it for them and gets through the clutter.
And as we go further with this, and I obviously it would have to be an opt-in service or something like that, but if the car could at some point even monitor how fast you're driving and if you're stopping at stop signs and stopping at stoplights and stuff like that, and granted, it kind of gets into a Big Brother thing, but if I opt in for that service to be willing to be monitored, that again, I could take a printout and bring it to my insurance company and they say, this guy is a safe driver. He doesn't drive more than 3 to 4 miles over the posted speed limit, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so. The technology is interesting and wonderful in a lot of ways, because you're going to be able to do a lot of things with it. We probably won't be the first, second, or third company to lead into any of the driver behavior space, mm-hmm. not because in certain circumstances it might not be really valuable to people, but just because, again, our brand is really centered on this non-intrusive, non-oversight, mm-hmm. You can trust the relationship that we have, because at the heart of it, we want to have people, the broadest number of people, have confidence that we're going to be there for you in emergency situations and so forth. And there are companies today, there are a couple insurance companies that have already invented ways that you could have your vehicle probed for your driving behavior. And, it'll be a while before that looks like something important enough for us to even entertain with our customers. And again, not that there's certain use cases where almost every scenario you could think of would be okay, but there's way too many places where we just want to make sure when people think about OnStar and what we do, here's what we do, mm-hmm. and it's not about making sure you're a good driver, because then somebody will say, well, wait a minute, every now and then I'm not as good a driver as I'd like to be. Mm-hmm. Boy, somehow or another, OnStar will do something with that. We don't really, at this point, see ourselves in that business.
One of the other possibilities about OnStar, not necessarily with the vehicle diagnostics, that we had discussed in one of our previous meetings, that I also thought had incredible potential, was the fact that because you have this technology deployed on so many vehicles on the roadways in different geographic parts of the country, in a sense, you're almost it could be optimized as a traffic reporting system, or almost as a weather reporting system. While you're not doing it, and again, you're concerned about confidentiality of your drivers, talk about, in a sense, the possibility and about the promise that could represent, and are you even thinking about that?
Well, I think what you can already see that's very related to kind of the core of our business today, if you look at this vehicle diagnostic service, we now already have the world's largest non-captured test fleet of vehicles. And so you're right, today we're seeing in a broad sense, not identified back to anybody's individual vehicle, and the information honestly wouldn't be that sensitive anyway, we're able to see how do these vehicles perform, what issues do they encounter if they're operating in February in Montana versus July in Louisiana, and what difference does it make if the vehicle has 150,000 miles on its odometer or 8,000 miles on its odometer. And car companies have a pretty good view of what happens to vehicles inside their warranty periods, but honestly, the holy grail for vehicle engineers to get a better understanding of how things go is what's happened beyond warranty periods, where the information tends to be a little less rigorously gathered. We're getting 2.2 million opportunities a month now to get a look at some of that information and see the patterns that emerge and what kinds of vehicles perform in what ways, again, under every condition that we can now, we don't have to simulate any conditions. I mean, literally, we have the granularity to see that. To your point, does that extend beyond that kind of very vehicle-centric data gathering to other things? I mean, it could. Again, one of the things that the 911 folks have kind of talked to us about a little bit was to say, hey, look, you know what? There are going to be parts of a state or a county or whatever where something's going on and that we're very interested in, but we don't have people on the ground. Boy, if you could offer one of your customers, if you could kind of draw a little geo-boundary around the area we're concerned about, and if you receive a call from one of your customers in this area, if you could ask them, would they be willing to give us their observations about what they're seeing, because we're very interested whether it's the traffic's all congested or whatever, that could be a huge service of gathering data. And again, we found our customers incredibly willing to be good Samaritans. We started a relationship with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children for Amber Alerts, and that's not at all intrusive. I mean, especially the way you do it with an opt-in. Do you want to participate? Is this something, if there's an Amber Alert in your area, and you're talking to us, would you like us to explain what the situation is so that if you see something, you can respond using OnStar?
Well, and let's
people
just bring
are,
it back.
People are in for that.
And we'll bring it back to just a recent event that you were talking about where a woman was abducted and she was talking on a cell phone to her mother. Relate that story for a second.
Yeah.
It's, just a success
this
story.
This happened last week. And honestly, we would not have known it happened because we get a couple million calls a month. The kind of granularity of these things, when you're getting the kind of number of crashes and things that we get, you lose them inside the business sometimes. But we picked it up because it was a news story. There was a woman in her mid-20s that was at an ATM machine making withdrawals. She was actually on her portable cell phone with her mom at the time, just talking, and she was abducted. And all the mother heard at the other end of this conversation was she heard the scuffle. She heard her daughter say, please don't hurt me, just take the car. And then the phone died. And you can imagine what the mom's condition was. The mom called 911 in Southern Florida, talked to what turned out to be a wonderfully insightful 911 operator. We've listened to the tapes between the mom and the 911 operator, and as you'd expect, the mother's very emotionally distraught, which I think any parent would be. And this operator is just taking her through a routine version of how do I get all the information I need to be able to be as helpful as we can be. And finally gets near the end of the call, and the 911 operator says to the mom, what kind of car does she have? And the woman said, well, she has a Cadillac. And the operator said, was it a CTS? And she said, oh yeah, it's a CTS. And she said, well, does it have OnStar? And at this point, the mom wasn't thinking about any OnStar or anything else, because she's involved in this. And the mom, and you could just hear it in this call, the mom goes, yeah, it does, but I'm not sure my daughter would know how to use it. And then the operator said, well, that's okay, she doesn't need to know how, we know how. And it was that woman's understanding, the 911 operator's understanding, and she'd probably had a couple OnStar interactions before, that led us to have that insight. She then followed back through, was able to connect all the dots, ultimately get to us. We were able to use our technology to locate the vehicle, put the police in contact with the vehicle. They still had the woman, she was still abducted, she was in the backseat of the car, they had her underneath a blanket. Who knows? We don't know at this point what might have happened to her, but she was recovered, she was safe, and at the end of the day, the heroes in all of this stuff, I mean, the number one hero is the mom's ability to obviously be able to work through the whole issue as quickly as she did.
And
the big hero is the 911 operator who thought to ask, does it have OnStar?
Right.
Because it probably wouldn't have otherwise come up. And
so another thing that I want to kind of relate it to in a sense is, like, I live in Los Angeles, so, and it's, you know, very heavily congested, and talk about the promise again of that this could represent, because you've just launched turn by turn navigation,
right.
And we'll seg right into that with this. If I could get into my General Motors vehicle and, you know, ping OnStar, knowing where I want to go, and they say, okay, don't take the 101 because it's a parking lot, take these roads instead, then that to me is also the promise that this represents.
And that's possible. Honestly, we've had versions of a service that we've embedded in a platform we call OnStar Virtual Advisor, where you can tell us, it was kind of the early version of something like that, you could tell us ahead of time through a web profiling tool what route you would normally take to work. And the objective of the service was to allow you in the morning to touch the button to OnStar, and in an automated way, we would look at that route for you as you're leaving your driveway and say it's either clear or it's not clear. Mm. So it kind of give you a go, no go on your specific route, pretty quick service. Actually, it was a good service for what it represented at that time, but we were still in a position there to be evolving the safety and security side of the platform so much and trying to communicate that we didn't continue to emphasize it in our marketing as much as we could have, because again, we're trying to make sure the brand stands for first and foremost, the peace of mind positioning. We continue to evolve that platform. To your point, that platform today, with how you could think about the technology, could be without a lot of deep changes, could say, all right, here I am today. You're on this part of this drive. Not only is this route congested, but we will search for two or three alternates for you, check the traffic on those, and suggest one of them. That wasn't the way the service was originally conceived, but it certainly could be. And, you know, the inherent kind of flaw of any of those systems is, if there's a flaw, the underlying validity of the traffic information itself. And, you know, we want to make sure, if we're putting our brand in the mix of these services, that it's not going to be fundamentally negatively affected by, hey, this traffic information is pretty good, but frankly, it's not good enough that you can really count on it. That's changed a lot over the last 2 or 3 years. There's a lot of companies, independent companies for a lot of reasons, taking advantage of embedded sensor probes that have been put in freeways. I mean, mm-hmm. I know in Southern California, in your mm-hmm. neck of the woods, there are a lot of roads that have been instrumented because it's obviously critically important, a lot of use cases there, as well as there are some companies that are actually driving these routes or they've enlisted the support of delivery van services that are on the roads anyway, and they're gathering information from those as traffic probes. So I would suggest you'll see from us as we go forward, and we're not making any announcements, but you'll see kind of a reincarnation of what we started to get some experience with a few years ago into the next version of that we'll be able to feed into, as you said, some navigation scenarios beyond just going to work.
Well, and that, again, talk about the possible promise here. And I just think about this. This is how my mind goes when I get introduced to some of these things. In the cell phone industry, one of the things that they're really, you know, talking about is LBS, location-based services. And in a sense, OnStar, I think, has a unique opportunity for that as well. Granted, on an opt-in basis as
right.
well, but if I'm driving from Los Angeles to San Francisco, say, and I've got time to spare, why can't I plug something in through OnStar to say, take me the scenic route and show me all the lighthouses? Or even something as simple on my way to work and I've got some time, you know, again, opting in to say, hey, Matt, you're passing Starbucks and I know you love a Mocha Grande. And they're having a 25% off, you know, promotion with this
sure.
little coupon or something.
Yeah, I'd say there are two different answers. one on the side of, can we make the technology more broadly useful than particularly in a scenario like navigation, point A to point B? And the answer is absolutely yes. And is there a reasonable use case there that would kind of make a lot of sense and could be really great for folks? I mean, you know, people have all kinds of different interests, right? And you know, we've got a wonderful interstate highway system in the United States that generally you won't know which state you're in unless there's kind of a mountain in the distance, right? And it's kind of been architected that way. But you don't know necessarily where to get off because you really have this interest, and gosh, you're actually within 3 miles of, you know, some historic site that's of interest to you. Can we, going forward, think of our service being something that would say, yeah, all right, we're gonna know that either about you because you've told us, or you can ad hoc just say, hey, look, I'm in Milwaukee. You know, this used to be the home that made, you know, beer was famous here. There must be like these old breweries and stuff here. I want to see that. Or I'm at Gettysburg. I want to go through a tour of the battlefield. Or I'm in Napa Valley and I want to see the you know, the vineyards. Or I'm in New England and I want to see the covered bridges. And absolutely interesting opportunities for us to take this technology that's already there, you know, kind of modify the edges of it to, so that it can accommodate those kinds of use cases and go. And that's in our plans. And I think that'll be fun to do and fun to launch. And I think we'll get a lot of wonderful customer reaction for that. The kind of e-commerce side of this thing, which we encountered initially in our days when we kind of came through the dot-com period in the late 90s, I'm less, at least our customers to this point, have shown less broad interest in that. And, you know, that can change. And, you know, I think what, if I've learned anything personally, I think if we've learned anything in the 10 years or so we've been doing this is, I mean, we're not smart enough to, you know, we can't get overly religious about any of these things and say, oh, you know, this will never be never. But at this point in time, your first question about going and seeing, you know, things that might be of interest to you, to us, is very straightforward and a reasonable use of the technology. The kind of beaming the coupon in as you pass Starbucks, that just doesn't yet feel like it fits our brand as well as we might want it to fit. And honestly, customers, if you test those kinds of concepts on customers, I mean, everybody kind of would say, oh, I want a deal, but you get deeper into it and say, is that something that you really want to have a relationship with? It, at least at this point, doesn't seem to be there. And honestly, there probably will be better mechanisms. The other thing we've really tried to respect is, you know, we're not going to be the only person in the world that interacts with you when you're mobile, right? I mean, look at the, you know, what's happened already with what's available on cell phones and how devices are converging and cell phones are location, you know, kind of enabled now increasingly. And so, you know, we can do things very uniquely in a vehicle that are very valuable to people because it's that environment. But honestly, they're going to be people, you know, the 150 million cell phone subscribers in the country that have access to these, you know, emerging technologies that folks like Verizon and others are bringing to the market. I mean, we don't want to just be there because, well, we're here too. You know, I mean, if there's a more straightforward, you know, higher volume way for this stuff to be brought to life, and it really doesn't get a lot of additional value because we optimize it for the vehicle, we've got other things we could be spending our time on that would really be unique in our space, and people would say, hey, I really appreciate the work you guys have done here. And there's always a finite amount of things you can do.
Turn-by-turn navigation being the latest. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've taken the technology that has been able to be, you know, pretty advanced now that we put the seventh generation of hardware out, that has turned every one of our OnStar systems from here forward into an enabled navigation system in the vehicle. And while there will continue to be separate screen-based nav systems in many levels of high-end vehicles because of the utility of those systems and the kind of price affordability points that's there, you kind of the missing link for nav, at least a factory-enabled nav system, has been something that could be mass deployed. And in our world, that means across Saturns, every Saturn and every Chevy that would never have had a couple $1,000 screen-based system. So Gen 7 lets us do that. And there's no screen. There's some vehicles, there's a little bit of a text display possibility, but the concept is, press the button, talk to the live advisor. You either know the address you want to go to, you know a POI you're looking for. They determine that location with you. They create a digital bundle of instructions that they download to the car. The call ends, the radio comes back on, you're driving, and now the car leads you to where you want to go. So the car's smart enough to be your wingman as you're going. And you know, every time you come up on a turn, the car's smart enough to know that. The radio automatically mutes. It says, turn right 500 feet ahead at Maple Avenue. You turn right, radio comes back on, and you keep going. And you can go, you know, literally a mile away, or you can take it from, you know, you could take it from, you know, New York to San Francisco, and it'll take you.
We got a demonstration of it in Detroit, and it was pretty incredible. I mean, for those of us who are directionally challenged, it was pretty incredible. And what was rather interesting is, you know, we went off the beaten path a little bit, and it came on and said, you're off the, you know, the scheduled track, do you want to get back on, and things like that.
So. Yeah, and, you know, again, there are other people who are going to do turn-by-turn, and you can actually see in some portable cell phones, people have turn-by-turn capability. What we can do uniquely in a vehicle, which in this case makes sense because you're going to need directions a lot of times while you're driving, is we can optimize how that interaction works for you while you're driving. So we have dead reckoning in the vehicle that you don't really have in a portable phone. So if you get shaded from the satellites or you're in a tunnel or whatever, the vehicle can kind of respond because it's got infrastructure to do that and keep you in kind of the accurate location. We do this, again, mute the radio. I mean, a lot of times, again, we've tested our own versions of the portable nav systems and handhelds versus others, and it can't be as seamless as if you designed the vehicle with this embedded in it. I mean, it just doesn't feel the same way when the information is being delivered. And again, our objective is to make this valuable to anybody that might buy a vehicle, not just somebody that wants to go buy nav services, which means it's got to be very easy to use. To your point, if you drive off route, it can't be some complicated, crazy thing that gets you back. The way Walt and the guys have engineered it is, the system just says, hey, we'll see you off the route. You still want to go to this destination? If you say yes, you're not going to go back, talk to an advisor, start all over. The system's smart enough to remember where you wanted to go, grabs the location of the vehicle automatically from where you are now, replots the route, and then just kind of keeps you going. And it doesn't, I mean, some people originally thought, well, it's just going to make me do a U-turn and go back. No, I mean, there's a lot of roads in this country that aren't that straightforward, right? I mean, you're driving around Boston, or you're going to some of these places, go I can't get back to that place I just was about a block ago without, so it doesn't try to do that. It just says, okay, I'm here now. I still know where I want to go. Puts the new route in. That whole process takes about 20 seconds, really. I mean, it's amazingly fast. And then you're just off to the races again. And again, the other thing we've realized is there are other things that are going to be substitutes for that. There's screen-based nav systems in some vehicles. And so we try to do what we know our value is really well, but we don't try to say we can do everything everybody else does. And if we're doing it right, our approach will be valuable to a large number of people. And for people that need more granularity or whatever it is that they're looking for, there'll be alternatives for them. So.
Your final thoughts on the first 10 years and the second 10 years?
Yeah, it's just amazing. we aspired to be where we are today. I mean, we could have never realized what it would have taken to get here. We would have had no idea of the path we would have taken. We did know we had to learn a lot. I think we came in here appropriately humble at the beginning of saying we didn't exactly know a lot about how this would evolve. And I think that's helped us, actually. I think if we'd have come in here believing we knew everything and just were running down a path and we would have said, we don't care what input we get, this is right, that's one level of vision and focus that helps you get through things, but I don't think it would have led us to where we are today. So, we got some very good early advice from a number of people that frankly turned into be really good things that say, basically you're not going to be able to come up with 5-year plans that are really firm and you're going to know them all. You're going to have to have a strategy that allows you to listen and sense and think about what's moving around you in the technology space and try to create an execution that doesn't commit you to it, a path that if something moves, you just can't kind of evolve towards where it's moved to. And, again, if you'd have said 10 years ago, hey, you're going to be sitting with 5 million customers, you're going to be on the brink of going standard equipment across the rest of the GM product line, your brand is going to be somewhere between Sony and Microsoft's brand in terms of its unaided awareness and really high on emotional scores, the business model works, you guys are above the line financially, and you're poised to leverage the assets. And you'll have a team, back then there were 5 of us. We started, it was like, wow, that's pretty interesting, sitting on cardboard boxes. Now there's a team of 500 people that are just very dedicated to doing this. Their hearts are in it, their emotions in it, very talented people. And I tell you, I'd say, okay, maybe we could have been in a different place, and we certainly haven't done everything right, but I know we could be in a different place that wouldn't be as far if we hadn't gotten the kind of support and direction from GM and the access to the talent we had. So I don't know where we're going in 10 years. I mean, there'll be more stuff. We'll have more customers. We'll have more things. So the size of the business, the breadth of the business is going to continue to expand. We're likely to be in other parts of the world with versions of what we're doing here. And again, I think the whole nature of this category means everybody's going to have something like this in their vehicles, and in some ways then it's another competitive dynamic for us, which we've been preparing for, so that isn't a scary thing, but it's also the right thing for all these people that we've come to know and love in the 911 community that need the help to be supported the way we can support them with this kind of technology.
On a personal level, it's really interesting, having spent as much time as I've spent with you and learning about OnStar, it's something that I would want to have for the people I love in my life, just to make sure that they're safe and to give them that extra level of security. Your passion comes through whenever you speak. It's a pleasure speaking with you. Chet Huber of OnStar, thanks for being on the podcast.
Pleasure. Thank you.
For the next year, I'm Matt Kelly on podtech.net.